Okay, let's unpack this. We have a fascinating dossier today. Just a really detailed look at a vast, ambitious spiritual project, the Hearing Him Org, or Progetto Hearing Him.
Yeah, and ambitious is almost an understatement.
Right. I mean, the word barely scratches the surface. What the listener has provided here, it's not just an article. It's essentially the comprehensive operational blueprint. It outlines this entire global vision, a whole ecosystem of spiritual tools, and a very, very detailed, progressive six-phase curriculum.
It really is. It's a technical document. You know,
yeah.
It defines a massive integrated system. And when you start to look at the overview, the projects... Well, its strategic effectiveness really begins with its diagnosis of the problem.
Yes. Let's start there.
What's fascinating here is the core issue they identify right out of the gate. They say the greatest obstacle for the modern spiritual seeker. It's just definitively the noise.
The noise. It's such a simple universal, but man, it's an incredibly powerful diagnosis, isn't it?
It really is.
Because they aren't just talking about, you know, volume. They break that noise down into several components that are just so pervasive. Things like crippling anxiety, for one.
A huge one.
And then there's the pervasive digital distraction, which we all know. But, crucially, they also talk about what they call mechanical religiosity.
Which is such a great phrase.
It's perfect. The idea of just going through the motions,
yeah.
You know, following rituals or doctrines without any genuine, deep personal connection, no real guidance.
Exactly. And because of this persistent multi-layer noise,
yeah.
You've got the internal chaos, the external distractions, and that hollow spiritual performance, they argue the capacity to hear the voice of God has been fundamentally lost.
Or at least obscured.
Obscured.
Yeah.
For too many people. So the entire project exists to restore this lost frequency. It is designed as a very structured path, guiding the individual from the absolute fundamentals of identity all the way up to the rational intellectual defense of the faith.
Mm-hmm.
And even leader formation.
It's explicitly conceived as a truly complete integrated ecosystem.
Absolutely. A to Z.
And the journey is so clearly structured with purpose. It ensures that you, the user, aren't just, I don't know, accumulating theoretical knowledge.
Yeah.
And that practical focus, it connects directly to their defining principle, their mission statement, which is just so direct.
So actionable.
It is, moving out of theoretical religion into real life.
And that speaks to a profound recognition that, you know, faith has to intersect directly with the stress of a Monday morning.
Right.
With the complexity of career decisions, the emotional toll of loss, or it just doesn't hold up in the modern world. This whole elaborate six-phase design is intensely focused on tangible daily application and utility, not just, you know, pious contemplation.
So let's begin by exploring how they've engineered the scale of this project, because it's immense. We really have to start by defining what Hearing Him is not, because calling it a curriculum, like I did at the start, it almost undersells the blueprint we have in front of us.
It does. The dossier is very, very clear on its definition. It is not just a standard theology course, and it is certainly not just another content channel pumping out videos.
No.
It is defined explicitly as an international ecosystem of spiritual tools. And that distinction is paramount because the emphasis is not just on information, but on providing practical tools.
Tools.
Mechanisms.
Yes. Mechanisms designed to deliver practical solutions to spiritual and emotional problems. The entire infrastructure is geared toward helping you navigate real-world problems by restoring this lost capacity for immediate internal guidance.
Which they term restoring the frequency.
That's the one.
Restoring the frequency. That's the key therapeutic outcome desired across all six phases, isn't it? It's guiding the individual back to that place of unhindered listening, which, as we said, they believe has been completely drowned out.
Just swamped by the pervasive digital and psychological noise of contemporary life.
Yeah, yeah.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture of their ambition, the project was born with a vision without borders.
Right.
They immediately recognized that the challenge they're addressing, the noise, the anxiety, the lack of purpose.
Yeah.
It's not isolated to one culture or country.
It's universal.
It's a human condition at this point. The pain of the silence of God, as they put it, and the innate search for purpose. These things transcend geography and language. That universal pain point is the justification for the global scope.
And their commitment to that global vision is absolutely hardwired into the operational plan, which is so crucial. This isn't some local project that they decided to translate later on as an afterthought.
Not at all. They structure the multi-language content strategy from the very beginning. They saw global reach as a prerequisite for success, not a bonus feature.
So what does that look like in practice?
Specifically, they commit to having all core material. And they really emphasize this applies especially to the foundational building blocks, so phase one and phase two, made available in a minimum of three languages.
Three languages from the jump.
From the jump. And this initial commitment allows them to immediately target massive audiences in Latin America, the United States, Europe, and, you know, potentially beyond, right out of the gate.
And this is where the nuance is so essential and where, you know, this deep dive really pays off. The document makes a crucial distinction that differentiates this approach from most international content strategies.
It's a game changer.
It's not just linguistic translation. It is meticulously defined as the cultural adaptation of the message.
Exactly. You're not just swapping Portuguese words for English or Spanish equivalents. You are ensuring that the concepts, the analogies, the practical applications, that they resonate within completely different cultural, political, and even socioeconomic frameworks.
Can you give us an example of that?
Sure. That level of intentionality shows deep understanding of international, well, dissemination challenges.
Yeah.
For example, phase two, which we'll get to, includes a module called Segunda-feira, Sagrada, Sacred Monday.
Sacred Monday. I love that.
It's about finding God in your work.
Yeah.
But the structure of the work week, the very concept of vocation, it differs drastically between, say, a highly secular, high-pressure North American finance environment and a Latin American, more community-focused context.
Totally different worlds.
Right. So cultural adaptation means ensuring that the advice provided for Sacred Monday feels real and achievable regardless of the local expectation of work-life balance or what a career even means.
That makes perfect sense. It signals a recognition that mechanical religiosity or the pressures that generate all that noise, it looks fundamentally different in São Paulo than it does in London or New York.
The underlying pain points are universal, but the examples and applications have to be adapted to be effective. Otherwise, the project just stays theoretical, which is the very thing they're fighting against.
And they would risk their own system becoming its own form of mechanical religiosity in a different language.
Precisely. They are mitigating that exact risk.
So moving on to how users actually discover and enter this system, the digital presence is described as this accessible content hub. How is that structured to manage the flow of traffic into a pretty complex six-phase system?
Okay, so the primary navigational entry point is the official site. And this site is designed to function not just as, you know, a library of content, but as the central hub. It's where you, the user, don't just passively consume, but crucially, you understand your personalized journey.
So it's like a diagnostic tool.
It is. It helps you identify where you currently stand, and from there, which phase you should start with. It manages expectations, and really importantly, it prevents an overwhelmed user from trying to jump straight to phase six before they've even finished phase one.
Right. You can't run before you can walk.
Exactly. And then you have the content drivers. These are designed to attract the initial users, the ones who are out there searching for immediate relief from something.
And that's the blog.
That's the blog. And it's fascinatingly described. It's not a news feed. It's not an updates channel. It's a source of dense and constant content that specifically addresses those real pains we talked about. Acute anxiety, career confusion, relationship issues, biblical doubts.
The things people are actually typing into search engines at 2 a.m.?
That's it. And the analogy they use for the blog is highly strategic and very telling. It serves as first aid.
First aid. I like that.
It catches the reader who is actively searching for immediate answers to a real felt pain point. It provides enough initial relief or insight or information to build trust, and then it guides them organically into the project's deeper structured phases.
So it's the magnet, the funnel that starts the whole transformation journey.
Exactly. It ensures that external search traffic translates into committed users on the six-phase path.
So the blog handles the immediate surface-level pain and attracts the confused seeker. Then, to complement the written material, they have the podcast.
Right, which offers deep, extended conversations. This shows a very layered approach to content delivery. You've got immediate relief through the blog, navigational structure through the site, and extended context and, I suppose, a sense of community via the podcast.
It's a very modern, multi-platform approach. It ensures accessibility regardless of how you prefer to consume content, reading, listening, or you just need urgent help right now.
They've recognized that the user is rarely looking for a comprehensive six-phase theological system, at least not initially. They're looking for help with their anxiety. The ecosystem is built to meet that acute need first,
right,
and then deliver the full solution.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me, because the ecosystem's power is in its structure.
The architecture of it all.
Yes. The entire project is structured as a progressive six-phase journey. It is systematic, it's methodological, sequential. Each phase systematically builds the necessary psychological and theological foundation for the next. It's almost like a military training program or a university curriculum.
You can't skip steps.
You cannot skip steps and expect the foundation to hold.
And that progressive structure is key because it prevents one of the most common pitfalls in spiritual development.
Which is what?
Attempting advanced concepts like the sophisticated phase six apologetics without first establishing a stable foundational phase one identity. You simply can't defend a faith you don't personally own yet. It doesn't work.
So let's break down that critical foundation, phase one, the fundamentals. They call it the essential collection. The core objective here is primary. Restore identity and the capacity for listening.
Right. They start with five distinct modules that move the user through a very tightly focused progression.
Module one.
Module one, Kamis Goraki. Start here. It's anchored specifically in the Gospel of John, and they define it simply as the basis of everything. It's theological ground zero. It establishes the nature of God, the nature of light, and the critical importance of relationship over ritual.
And from there, you move immediately to O Grande Plano, the Great Plan.
Yeah, which centers on salvation and understanding the divine exchange. This gives the user the foundational, let's call it the cosmic narrative of their faith, the big story.
But the real pivot point in phase one, the detail that I think warrants the most attention because it dictates the entire rest of the journey, is module three, O Espelho, the mirror, identity.
This is the one.
This focuses on the crucial, necessary mindset change from the position of slave to son. And the dossier marks this as the psychological bedrock of the entire project.
It is. Let's spend some time on that specific shift because it's so deeply theological, but it's also profoundly psychological.
It really is. The identity of a slave is defined by duty, obligation, fear of punishment, and transactional obedience. Their work is motivated entirely by external pressure.
To avoid a negative consequence or earn a reward.
Exactly. But the identity of a son or daughter, that's completely different. It's defined by inheritance, unconditional love, internal motivation, and access to the father's resources. It's a total paradigm shift.
Exactly. That distinction slave versus son is the critical engine for escaping that mechanical religiosity we talked about.
Yeah.
If you see yourself as a slave, your spiritual life becomes a checklist of performance.
Just trying not to mess up.
Right. It's all designed to avoid consequence or earn favor. But if you can grasp your identity as a son, the entire relationship reframes to one based on secure love and inheritance. Without that foundational understanding, the rest of the journey just is a tyriad. It collapses back into performance anxiety and noise.
And that reframes the entire purpose of listening, doesn't it? You're no longer frantically seeking instructions to follow just to avoid a mistake.
No.
You are tuning into the loving counsel of a father for direction and confidence.
And once that identity is secure and redefined, the next logical step is module four, a frequencia, the frequency.
Right.
This provides the spiritual techniques and disciplines for tuning in to the divine voice. It's the core mission of the organization itself. This teaches the practical how after you've secured the theological who.
And the culmination of phase one is module five, O Transborder, the overflow or purpose.
Yeah, and this module asserts a really powerful spiritual principle. The natural, inescapable consequence of having established your identity and hearing the voice of God is fulfilling a mission. The listening leads directly to action.
It's not passive.
Not at all. It sets the stage for everything that follows, all the application phases. So phase one takes you from a foundational text, John, to identity, which is sonship, to communication, the frequency, and finally to application, which is purpose.
And once that foundational structure is solid, the project immediately shifts gears.
Right into phase two. Real life, emotional intelligence of the kingdom. This is the anti-noise phase.
This is truly where theology meets Monday morning. The core objective of phase two is so intensely practical. It's about resolving the emotional pains that generate the spiritual and psychological noise by applying those phase one foundations.
And it offers 10 practical tools that deal with the immediate, visceral challenges of modern life. The choice of topics here is extremely specific and I think targeted right at the contemporary mental health crisis they identified in the introduction.
Absolutely. I mean, look at module six, O Silencio Noah, Cal Silence in the Chaos.
A great title.
It provides specific practical tools designed explicitly to combat anxiety. It targets one of the most pervasive modern problems directly, treating anxiety as a symptom of a lost frequency.
And they absolutely tackle the hard, necessary internal maintenance work too. Module 7 is E Arte de Soltar, the Art of Letting Go.
Forgiveness.
Which addresses the difficult but absolutely necessary process of forgiveness. And that's a foundational emotional tool. If you cannot forgive, you remain psychologically tethered to the past. It prevents any forward movement, regardless of how much theology you know.
You're just stuck.
You're stuck. Then we hit the module that is most often cited as a game changer for people engaged in this material. Module 8, Segunda Feira Sagrada.
Sacred Monday.
It tackles the sacred-secular divide head on. It asks, how do you find God in the daily routine, in your commute, in common secular work? This deliberately moves the concept of spiritual practice out of the Sunday service and into the workplace and the home.
It connects faith to the most mundane aspects of existence.
It does. And this expansion of faith into the routine is what separates the entire ecosystem from the mechanical religiosity they criticize. If God is only present during a special event, the faith is theoretical.
But if God is present in your daily work, it's practical. It's real life.
It is. They also commit time to inevitable human suffering. Module 9, Inverno de Alma, the Winter of the Soul. This provides guidance on dealing with grief and prolonged periods of waiting. These are inevitable parts of the human experience that are often avoided in surface-level spiritual teaching, but which require specific spiritual tools and acknowledgement. You can't just skip over them.
And finally, phase 2 concludes with a highly functional component, module 10, Abusala the Compass.
Practical wisdom for decision-making.
That wraps up the emotional intelligence phase. It gives you the structured tools to navigate life's pressures and complex choices, all based on your newly established identity and functional listening skills.
It's so clear that phases 1 and 2 are designed almost entirely to stabilize your internal world, your identity, your emotional health, your practical guidance, before they ever ask you to engage in deeper academic study or external service work.
It's all about building a robust psychological core first.
That's it.
So that internal stability has been achieved. The user now has an identity and has practical tools to manage anxiety and make decisions. Now, the curriculum transitions.
Into the intermediate and advanced stages, yeah.
Yeah.
We've moved from foundations and emotional management into dedicated deep study and vocational application.
Which brings us to phase 3, na mesa com Deus, at the table with God.
Deep biblical studies. And the focus here is critical because it doesn't just cover standard biblical topics like, you know, a study on the book of Romans or Revelation.
Yeah.
It focuses specifically on a series of character studies.
So it's about the people.
It's about the people. It uses the lives of biblical figures as profound case studies, emphasizing their behavior, their motivations, their human nature. The Bible is used here as a surgical mirror to study psychology and self-mastery.
That character-driven approach is, I think it's a methodological breakthrough. It makes this ancient text immediately relevant to modern behavioral issues, and we get a great specific example in the dossier that illustrates this depth.
Redo.
Volume 1 is titled A Fera na Porta, The Beast at the Door, The Case of Cain.
And within the context of analyzing the psychological landscape of Cain, the curriculum dives into 3 distinct modern behavioral topics: self-control, envy, and paternity.
Wow.
This shows the depth. It uses this ancient, pivotal story of humanity's first act of violence to dissect these specific, timeless human failings. It demonstrates the project's commitment to delivering practical psychological insight alongside theological study.
So it's not just, you know, Cain killed Abel, don't do that.
Not even close.
It's an intensive analysis asking, what was the psychological and emotional process in Cain that led to his moral collapse? And how do I guard against that exact process, that beast at the door in my own life?
Yes, especially regarding envy toward my sibling or my colleague at work.
Right. That's the real work of phase 3. It's a deep dive into the text for genuine, challenging character formation.
And the ability to extract these universal psychological patterns from an ancient text is the real strength of this phase. Yeah. It moves beyond simple narrative to deep behavioral modeling, but then phase 4 immediately pulls that character formation out into the broader world.
Exactly. Phase 4 is vocations, vocation's specific purpose.
This is the definitive intersection of faith and the professional market.
Where faith meets the job market.
Yeah. The core objective is helping the individual discover their specific design, their gifts, and critically, how to apply their phase 1 through 3 learning directly to their professional life, whatever that profession might be.
And this phase provides a really key distinction that the dossier emphasizes. I think we need to underline this for you, the listener.
We do. This is a big one.
This phase is explicitly not about pressuring users into working for the church or becoming a full-time paid religious professional.
No, the goal, rather, is about training the individual on being the church at work.
That distinction is absolutely crucial for the project's longevity and universal appeal. It universalizes the concept of vocation.
It does.
Every career, whether you are in finance, healthcare, software engineering, or running a small business, is treated as a mission field where you're meant to apply your spiritual frequency, your identity, and your moral character.
It's essentially defined as an expansion of that Sacred Monday concept we saw in Phase 2.
But blown out.
Blown out into a full-scale life and career consulting approach. It helps users see their career not just as a necessary way to pay the bills, but as a spiritual calling and a primary platform for applying their faith principles.
And this dedication to integrating the spiritual with the professional, it creates a fully integrated spirituality. It bridges that gap between sacred and secular, a gap that, if you leave it unaddressed, contributes significantly to that mechanical religiosity they identified as the problem in the first place.
They are systematically solving the problem of a compartmentalized faith.
We are now moving into the final, most advanced stages of the curriculum. This is all designed for maximum external influence and rigorous intellectual defense.
This is where the individual transitions, yeah. Having established internal security and vocational clarity, they move from student to potential mentor and leader.
And it's where their faith is intellectually tested by the hardest questions of our age.
Phase 5. In Sanando Pregadores, a Pescar. Teaching preachers to fish mentoring.
I love that name.
It's the explicit leadership formation arm of the entire project. It focuses on raising up individuals who can not only live the core message, but can communicate it effectively, clearly, and persuasively to others.
And the philosophy here is so pragmatic and powerful, relying on that famous adage. It explicitly states, "We don't deliver ready sermons, the fish."
No shortcuts.
Instead, the entire phase is dedicated to teaching the necessary foundational communication and interpretive skills. They focus heavily on hermeneutics,
which is the theory and practice of scriptural interpretation,
and homiletics,
the art of preaching and delivering a sermon or public address. In essence, teaching how to fish.
And that commitment to skill over content, that ensures longevity and adaptability, doesn't it?
Absolutely. In a world of rapidly shifting cultural norms and endless new information, if you only teach people what to say, the content quickly becomes outdated.
Right.
But if you teach someone how to interpret scripture rigorously, that's hermeneutics, and how to communicate that insight clearly and engagingly to a skeptical generation, that's homiletics, they're equipped for any challenge or crisis that arises over the next 40 years.
So hermeneutics, for instance, that ensures they don't simply read their own cultural biases into ancient texts. It teaches them to ask, what did this mean to the original audience?
And then what does it mean for us today? It's the intellectual discipline required to maintain interpretive integrity.
Right. And homiletics ensures that the content, once you've rigorously interpreted it, isn't just delivered as a dry lecture.
Exactly. The target audience here is focused on communicating the good news with clarity, grace, and depth, specifically tailored for the current generation, which often demands authenticity, relevance, and logical coherence. This phase aims to produce leaders who can speak to both the heart and the mind.
And phase 6 is the final armor plate, the ultimate intellectual security for this journal. Phase 6, a prova final da palavra, the final proof of the word, apologetics.
This is the capstone. The objective here is clearly articulated as the intellectual shielding of the faith. It's designed to provide solid evidential footing for the believer who inevitably encounters intense skepticism and rational doubt.
Whether that pressure is external, maybe from a university environment, or internal, just stemming from hard questions they can't answer themselves.
That's right. And the core concept driving this advanced curriculum is all proof of the word, tota prova da palavra. The goal is straightforward: to prove that the Bible is the Word of God using external evidences.
So taking it out of the realm of pure, subjective, emotional experience.
And grounding it firmly in external reality, science, and history.
And this is where the specificity and the strategy really shine. The dossier meticulously outlines the 5 explicit pillars they use for external evidence. They're not random. They are carefully chosen to cover a broad spectrum of scholarly and philosophical defenses.
Defenses against the common attacks levied against faith today.
Let's outline those critical pillars, because they form the entire basis of this advanced phase. The first pillar is science.
Yep, focusing on creation and intelligent design. This directly addresses modern questions about origins, evolution, and the apparent fine-tuning of the universe. It's a counter to philosophical naturalism.
Second is history.
This primarily uses archaeology and ancient texts to validate the historical accuracy and verifiable claims made within the biblical narrative. This directly confronts historical skepticism and revisionism. It provides external markers that the text is rooted in demonstrable reality.
Third pillar is life.
This one addresses the moral and psychological coherence found within the scripture. It examines the Bible's efficacy in accurately describing and successfully transforming the universal human condition.
So its practical applicability to morality, ethics, and emotional recovery.
Exactly. This pillar defends against the charge that faith is psychologically harmful or morally primitive.
And the fourth and fifth pillars are earth and heaven.
They're often taught as related but distinct. The earth pillar speaks to general revelation, the broader cosmological coherence, looking at the evidence found in the physical world, ecology, natural phenomena, as pointing toward design.
And the heaven pillar.
That deals with the theological implications of the spiritual realm, prophecy, and the unique claims of transcendent truth found in the text.
What's so fascinating about this structure is how it achieves its balance. You move from this intense internal experience in phases 1 through 4.
Right.
Through leadership training in phase 5, and you culminate with an intense, rigorous external defense in phase 6.
And this phase is explicitly described as providing the essential response for the skeptic and the security for the believer.
So it ensures that the person walking out of the full program isn't just emotionally healthy and vocationally focused, but they're also intellectually prepared to defend their worldview in any public square.
That holistic approach, addressing the heart, the mind, the vocation, and the external world, is precisely what makes this project an integrated ecosystem rather than just a simple curriculum. It's built strategically to withstand pressure from every possible direction and counter every form of noise they identified at the start.
So looking ahead, the project isn't content to just stop at the delivery of the 6 phases of content. The vision for expansion focuses heavily on creating practical, digital, and physical utilities.
Yeah, things that move beyond mere reading and curriculum to actively expand the user experience and ensure the established habits are maintained long term.
And that shows a profound understanding of modern engagement. You know, the user expects constant utility and accessibility.
They do. And the first major tool planned is the Hearing Him app. They recognize that their principles have to be integrated into the user's pocket.
The concept for the app is ambitious and, I think, brilliantly named. It's projected to be the spiritual Swiss Army knife.
Love that.
The focus is explicitly stated to be on daily utility and crisis management, not just content consumption. It needs to provide immediate, actionable help.
And that focus on real-time daily utility means solving the real-time problems they identified back in phases 1 and 2. Let's look at the specific predicted functionalities because they are incredibly targeted.
Okay.
First, an SOS button for crises of anxiety.
Wow.
This is immediate digital intervention. It connects directly back to phase 2's focus on emotional intelligence and providing that instantaneous silence in the chaos. It's designed to provide immediate crisis support and guided grounding techniques right on your phone.
That's a huge integration point. It takes the principle learned in phase 2 and delivers it with the immediacy of a modern app. What's second?
Second, a spiritual insights recorder. This is a practical, low-friction tool specifically designed for capturing those moments of clarity or guidance or realization.
The frequency.
Before it's lost to the endless digital stream and noise, it institutionalizes the habit of listening and documenting what you hear.
And third.
Third, and this links directly to the advanced stages, an apologetics knowledge base. This is the portable intellectual shield.
So if you are asked a skeptical question at work, or you encounter a difficult historical contradiction online,
you have immediate indexed access to the intellectual defense provided by phase 6. The app becomes the portable brain for the entire curriculum, ensuring that the knowledge you gained is instantly accessible in moments of pressure.
And the second tool plan is the physical journal. This is such a beautiful contrast to the high-tech app.
It really is.
Even in an increasingly digital world, they recognize the irreplaceable value of materiality and the physical act of writing. This is planned to be a high-quality daily journal specifically designed to create and sustain the fundamental habit of listening.
The concept here is about materializing the phase 1 daily tuning experience on paper. The goal, crucially, is to make the necessary discipline of listening and journaling less intimidating. It's about reducing the barriers to entry for maintaining the habit.
How do they achieve that friction reduction? Because a blank page can be terrifying.
Exactly. So the four scene structure involves guided pages. They're designed specifically to help you empty the mind, transferring the mental noise and anxiety onto the page, and then providing prompts to record the voice of God.
So it removes the immediate pressure of the blank page, which so often causes spiritual block or writer's block.
That intentional design element is ingenious. The blank page demands immediate creativity or profound structured thought, which most of us can't sustain daily. Guided prompts reduce that friction. It facilitates the actual habit they're trying to instill.
Daily, focused, tuning into the frequency.
Transforming an intimidating task into a manageable daily routine. The future roadmap shows they understand the necessary interplay between content, crisis management, and habitual discipline.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? We've covered everything that the Project Dossier promises, illustrating a journey of, well, extreme completeness. We analyzed the fundamental identity shifts, that crucial theological move from slave to son in phase one,
and the provision of practical emotional coping tools for anxiety in phase two.
We then progressed through deep character study in phase three, vocational integration in phase four, advanced leadership formation through hermeneutics in phase five, and we culminated in intense intellectual apologetics using external scientific and historical evidence in phase six.
The completeness is astonishing, but what stands out most to me is the strategic spectrum of engagement that the project supports. The dossier shows that it caters intentionally to a huge spectrum of needs and knowledge levels,
right?
From the casual reader relying on the blog for that immediate first aid for anxiety or career confusion, to the highly committed individual diving into the specifics of Cain's behavioral patterns in phase three, all the way to the deep scholar engaged in phase six, material and formal leadership training.
It's highly accessible at every level. It proves that the project truly wants to be found by anyone, whether you're just starting your spiritual journey, drowning in noise, or looking for the intellectual rigor needed to defend your deeply held beliefs globally.
It aims to be a complete answer to the fragmented nature of modern spiritual life.
It does, which brings us to one final important question for you to consider as you reflect on this massive project.
The core problem this entire six-phase ecosystem seeks to solve is noise, digital, emotional, and spiritual. And that problem is solved by providing spiritual tools and disciplined habits, like that planned physical journal.
So here's the thought. What non-spiritual noise reduction tools or disciplines, and we mean things outside of the obvious, like muting notifications or organizing your calendar, what do you rely on to achieve focus, sustained attention, or mental clarity in your daily life? What unexpected discipline or tool helps you tune into your own inner frequency amidst the constant chaos?